Hi, and thanks for tuning in to the EndpointSecurity.ca podcast from Positive eSolutions. I'm Robbie Ferguson, and through the course of this podcast, combined with our blog, we want to provide you with a free resource to be able to educate yourself and your staff about the very cybersecurity issues that are affecting your company in 2019. The year is well underway and everyone is back in business, and it makes this a very good time for us to reflect together on some of the most significant security developments that happened last year, as well as the implications for security in the year to come. Now, things are moving very quickly so far in 2019. The eternal cat and mouse game between security specialists and the bad guys is both accelerating and becoming more complex. So what should you look out for this year? Well, my first guest is Tony Anscombe. He's a global security evangelist and industry ambassador for ESET. Tony, welcome to the show.
Hello, Robin.
Tony, I want to get right into it. Let's talk about cryptojacking. Of all the types of cybercrime we're currently facing in 2019, cryptojacking seems to be relatively new to public awareness. Can you explain to us what that is and why it's becoming a threat?
So cryptojacking relates to cryptocurrencies. So we've all heard of Bitcoin and a number of the other cryptocurrencies. Those cryptocurrencies require mining to be created. So there's this encryption algorithm and kind of contest that the miners need to undertake to create the ledger that controls the currencies. And it's a really resource-intensive task. So cryptojacking is, rather than me buying lots of servers and trying to perform these encryption tasks, what I do is I steal resource from your machine, whether that's through malware or through scripts on websites, etc. And your machine runs slowly, and I benefit as the person cryptojacking your machine.
Oh, okay. See, because when I hear the term cryptojacking, I might think, well, I don't do cryptocurrency, so it's not going to affect me. But what you're saying is this is somebody using my hardware or my company's hardware in order to mine their own cryptocurrency.
Absolutely. And what happens is then the currency pays them for actually performing those tasks.
Pays the hacker, the malicious part.
It's your machine that's performing the task.
Right. How prevalent is this?
Well, it became very prevalent in 2018. So if 2017 was kind of all about ransomware, I'd say 2018 was a big crypto jacking year. And there's two reasons. One, you had the explosion of cryptocurrency in actual value, but you also then towards the end of the year that flattens out both in the value of the currency and the cost of the actual processing to somebody doing this legitimately is becoming, you know, fairly flat. So actually, it's better to do it through cryptojacking by stealing resource than it is to do it legitimately.
Yeah, I see. And of course, in business, we have really powerful servers. We've got some great workstations on our network. And if cryptojacking were to be able to infiltrate our network, well, they've got a powerful network to use, and suddenly our systems are going slow. How would we as a company scan for weaknesses that might lead to cryptojacking?
Well, the good news is, and I will use us as an example. So ESET's anti-malware product actually blocks cryptojacking, either in what I call traditional malware, so i.e. an executable on your machine being installed to use the resource, or if we see it in web pages. So the other option is you go to a website and the browser will start using resource in the background and actually cryptojack as well. Mm-hmm. And let's just put this in perspective. These cryptocurrencies use huge amounts of power to do this, massive amounts of power. Per transaction on Bitcoin, where I live here in California, the actual transaction cost in energy is around about $100. So I'm just putting it in real terms.
Tony, that's great information. I want to move on to another area of concern for people both in business and consumers. It's the Internet of Things. Of course, we've got devices like smart doorbells and Google Home or Amazon Echo, and they're all connected to the Internet. And recently, this ties in. The state of California passed regulation that will, in fact, ban consumer electronics from being manufactured with default passwords such as admin. And so have other states or countries done the same? And how does that kind of tie into our concerns about the Internet of Things?
Well, so firstly, let's define kind of the Internet of Things as you and I know it. There's the consumer stuff of, as you said, the doorbells and whatnot we have in our homes. But let's also think about the businesses as well. If you were going to move office and into a smart new office today, you know, you're going to have automated lights. Your building will know about occupancy. Mm-hmm. The building itself will have sensors for air quality, for temperature, for, you know, some of the utilities that you use. So you're going to move into a smart building. Now, that smart building, in effect, is one giant IoT device. So this isn't just about the doorbells and the toasters that you have at home. This is actually in our workplace, in our cities, and even in manufacturing with industrial IoT. So this is a huge market. Now, to come back to your point about regulation, mm-hmm. you know, IoT has been around for, you know, realistically, it's been fashionable for about 3 to 5 years. It's become a lot more normal with the introduction of home assistants, you know,
sure.
that listen to your voice and allow you to order things and control devices in your home. But security hasn't been on everybody's mind, you know. Technology vendors have run out, developed these great devices without thinking about security, and suddenly we see the bad guys taking mm-hmm. advantage of some of those devices. And also, we're oversharing. You know, whether okay. it's us as consumers or businesses, you know, where does the data go? Who has it? Where is it held? Mm-hmm. At some stage, regulation had to step in. So you've seen regulation here in California. The UK have put out 15 principles, and in fact, the first principle is exactly the same as the principle you mentioned about passwords.
Yeah, good example.
The GSMA, the Mobile Carriers and Operators Organization, have also put out fairly good standards on IoT security mm-hmm. For carriers. You know, I would liken this back to early Wi-Fi. If you and I drove down the street maybe 10 or 15 years ago when Wi-Fi first came around, we could connect to anybody's Wi-Fi. Sure. None of it was encrypted.
Oh, yeah? Those were the days of free internet.
they were the days because you could just park outside somebody's house, connect, and if you were a rogue warrior, so to speak. You know, I think IoT is in that curve where, you know, Wi-Fi got encryption and now you go down that street and you can connect to nothing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hope that IoT is in that same phase, where in 2 years' time, you and I will be sat here. There'll have been some regulation that will force the thought about security by design for the vendors making the devices. But what we don't want is too much regulation, because over-regulation stops innovation.
Sure. And it should almost be the responsibility of the companies to just make wise, as you say, security as the mindset during the development process. So looking back at that example of California's regulation about passwords not being ridiculously easy to guess passwords on devices that come out of the manufacturing plant, is that regulation, the need to have stronger passwords as you get a brand new product, is that valid protection against hacking, or should this be the responsibility of the individual consumers or the IT admins?
Well, I think that regulation specifically, while it's there so you think about security as the vendor building the device. So hopefully you will go much, much further beyond that. Mm-hmm. But as the consumer, yeah, I mean, when you unbox the device, you've got to set the password. But the problem is there complacency within consumers of creating the same password on everything? Is it too complex? Right. Have too many passwords? Yes. However, you can use complicated passwords, and you can use other methods.
Tony, users tend to find password management to be a chore. So we end up using the same passwords over and over again, opening us up to yet another vector of attack. So what's the best way that you can suggest for people to be able to practice better password hygiene?
So let's just cover the complicated password thing first. You know, I'm obviously a Brit, so I'm a football fan, and that's the football with the round football thing. You know, so if you're just say you're a Manchester United supporter and they're playing, let's give you Liverpool this weekend, I could have you know, a password that says MNU for Manchester United, 5, LIV for Liverpool, 0, and I could put an exclamation mark at the end. Mm-hmm. None of it's real words. It's only meaningful to me. It's about the score of a particular game. It's probably very, very hard for somebody to guess.
You're saying this is like a recipe for creating a stronger password?
Yeah, so think of a passphrase, you know, rather than a password, and then take characters out the passphrase. It's an easy way of remembering it. Mm. So if you drive a red Audi car, there you go, we've got three characters, RAC.
No. Oh.
Yeah. If your wife drives a blue Nissan Micra, yeah, I've got blue, yeah, and you can combine the two and you can put some special characters in, and you can do it with virtually anything you can think of in life. Mm. So you can create your own strong passwords in memorable terms, but not using real words, not things a cyber criminal is going to relate to you.
Hmm. As far as regulation goes, Tony, what do you see the Internet of Things, what are the regulations going to evolve into, and how can they cover through regulatory decisions the diversity of the Internet of Things products?
Well, there's going to be different regulation for different industries. So, for example, let's take autonomous vehicles. You know, an autonomous vehicle sitting on your drive is one giant IoT device. But however, because it's a road-going vehicle, there'll be heavy regulation on how the technology is implemented, how it communicates, what data it stores, et cetera, et cetera. You know, if I have a connected toaster, you know, the likelihood of somebody regulating my connected toaster is going to be fairly minimal. By the way, I don't understand why anybody has a connected kettle or toaster. So, you know, let's just put that one out there.
Make toast.
Yeah, good for them if they do have one. Yeah. But, you know, I don't see the reason. So I think different industries will see different things. And as we move towards smart cities with air quality sensors, et cetera, then it becomes more apparent. And if you think about smart, let's come back to that smart building example. Even in the building you're sitting in, there's probably some type of industry plant room where the HVAC systems are, the fire panel is, et cetera, et cetera. In a couple of years' time, all those that will probably be connected in some way. Hmm. You know, is the new ransomware me coming along as a cyber criminal and turning around and controlling your HVAC system, turning the heat up and turning around and saying, I'll turn it off when you pay me?
Wow.
Now, if we take that one step further and put that in a hospital, it could be a significant attack. So those type of things, I think, you know, people need to think about how to secure what the value of the device is, what it can control, and what the outcome could be. Mm-hmm. And I think the regulators will think that way too.
It makes me think about data breaches, and data breaches are kind of seeming to become an everyday occurrence now, Tony. Do you think that there's a danger that that people are going to become complacent about data breaches? Like, how can companies or regulators drive home a sense of urgency about staying careful online?
Well, so firstly, will people become complacent? I think they already are. Okay. Yeah, unfortunately. I'll ask you the question of, have you been part of a data breach?
Me personally, no.
Yes, personally. I would assume you probably have.
But if 10% of people open a phishing scam attachment, then the answer is, well, 1 in 10 people are part of that data breach.
But somebody has, whether you've been part of the Facebook breach or the Google Plus
as a victim,
your data will have been part of some breach.
I see what you mean. You mean my data. Victim of that breach?
Data. Mm-hmm. So, My question is, what did you do to then protect yourself? You know, those companies that typically have a data breach then offer some type of ID theft protection service that looks for your data being sold on the dark web or monitors the information that was actually stolen. Did you register for it? And the answer is, when I go around and ask consumers, did you, they typically all look blank and say no. Yeah, because we don't hear about what happens to the data from a consumer standpoint. So actually what happens when somebody steals this data, oh, they stole it, but we never hear about the actual outcome. Mm-hmm. Well, I have a personal story here. Yeah, British Airways had a breach last year, a very public breach.
Yeah.
Very unfortunate on one of their websites. Yeah, a cyber criminal used my credit card details for $6,000 worth of insurance.
Wow.
Now, I will say my bank stepped in, refunded the money, and voided the transactions. There were 42 transactions.
Yeah, 42? Before they stopped it?
Well, actually, before I rang the bank in turn and said, I think you should stop this.
Oh, no.
Wow. But they were super good. I will say they were super good. And yeah, all the money was refunded and the whole issue went away. But we don't hear those stories.
Yeah.
So my point is, as a consumer, we need to really think about things. And then we'll come back to what businesses, how businesses should think in just a moment. But when you, we've just had the holiday season. You know, when you shopped for the gifts online, did you create accounts in the places where you bought gifts? Or did you shop, did you check out as guest? Did you store the credit card details on those sites?
Mm.
Yeah, are they sites you're going to go back to before the next holiday season? Yeah, probably not. So you're doing that. It has that tick box, check out as guest. If you're not going to shop there more than once a month, don't create an account.
Mm-hmm.
Shop as guest. Don't Good allow advice. Them to store the data. You don't need to put your... Yeah, I can type my credit card number.
Yeah. Sure, yeah.
These things are all good ways to protect yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Then from the business side, you know, businesses need to think about who has access to the data. They need to segment who in organizations have access. Yeah, and if you look at data breaches, they typically start with spear phishing attacks. So they're targeted attacks by a cyber criminal sending in phishing emails, looking for credentials or looking for something
right.
To give them network access. And then they steal the data. You know, educate your employees, and that's one of the big things in here, yeah, is to educate employees. But also think about what data you're collecting. I don't, you know, maybe I need to know you as an account. Maybe I don't need to know everything about you. Maybe I don't, some of the questions I'm asking are nice for me to have, yeah, as a company, but maybe I don't need all of it. And if you've not shot with me for a year, maybe I can delete your account anyway. Maybe I can just remove the data. So companies need to step up and take some of that responsibility as well.
Mm. Outside of the company, is there any particular demographic, like say, are students more susceptible or perhaps the elderly? Are they more prone to being careless about data security?
Actually, I think it's you and I that are the problem here.
Really?
So I think students are far more conscious about privacy. If you think about the what I define as the Facebook generation, that's you and I. the internet.
Isn't it sad that the Facebook generation now means we're old?
Yeah. the internet came along. It was this great phenomena. We shared everything. Yeah, because it was wasn't it awesome that you could share everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you go and talk to that younger generation that I would say under 22 that have been brought up with technology as normal. You know, they've moved to Snapchat. They don't share everything. Most of their accounts are private. They think about, they've been educated slightly better than we have. So actually, I think the generation that is kind of some of the problem is us. Okay. And I would say that senior generation as well, because they don't understand some of the consequences.
Right.
But I think our generation is the one that needs the most education, and I think we still need it. If you talk to that younger generation and ask them, have you had to ask somebody to remove something from the internet about you? They'll turn and say, yes, one of my parents, because we like to share.
Yeah. Wow. And we're the working age individuals, like we're the ones running the IT departments, and that's a scary fact that we would be the most susceptible. Wow. So let's change modes a little bit here, Tony. That's some great food for thought, but I want to talk about GDPR. It was a big story last year, went live in May, and it represents a significant step forward in the regulation of data and privacy online, at least when it comes to Europe. So what are your views about maybe other countries that could follow suit, who's doing it, and who is lagging behind in that regard?
So the GDPR, firstly, let's cover what GDPR is. In very, very simplified terms, it means it puts you as the consumer, the person who the data is about, it puts you back in control of the data. A company has to explicitly ask for your consent to collect the data, and you have to opt into it. So suddenly now I'm back in control as the consumer. So this is a really positive thing, empowering consumers. Now, who does it actually cover? It covers anybody in the EU. Now, I specifically say in the EU because if you get on a plane and land in London today, you are in the EU. So therefore, GDPR covers you.
Okay.
When you fly back out of London and get back to Canada, it doesn't cover you. Yeah. But while you're there and you interact with a Canadian website that you do lots of stuff with because it's home, that Canadian website has to be GDPR compliant because you're actually coming from the EU. Mm-hmm. So actually, I think GDPR, while it's a European regulation, has and will have an effect globally. Yeah, because companies will have to do something for those people coming to their service from within Europe. So therefore, once I've done it for one, I may as well start thinking about doing some of those things for everybody and protecting them in similar ways. And you've already seen some other countries step in. I mean, Canada is a great example with their spam legislation, about the protections around spamming emails and use of email addresses. California, again, actually put in place some privacy legislation after GDPR was legislated last year. So other countries will follow suit and states will follow suit without question.
And have any countries fallen behind? Are there any that are ignoring GDPR?
I'm not sure. Well, ignoring GDPR could be very costly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, EU regulator can come and fine if they find you in breach. So I think this year we'll see some big companies probably fall foul of that regulation, and we'll see some big fines handed out. And they will try and make examples so that it forces other companies to step up, which is obviously good for us as consumers.
Right.
Will other countries that are falling behind? Well, not every country, unfortunately, thinks in the same way. Yeah, some countries allow the collection of data, and here, for example, here where I'm based in the US, my ISP has the right to collect my browsing history. I don't think most consumers realize that. I will say most ISPs have a privacy statement that says they don't, but they have the right to.
Okay.
Yeah, my point is there's no regulation that actually stops them from doing this.
Gotcha.
Do I see regulation coming on that? Probably not. Because there's no in Europe you had different cultures, some that were very private to start with. So you already had a momentum of people that wanted that privacy. I'm not sure every country has that momentum in the consumer field of wanting that privacy.
Now, if they were collecting that information, so your browser history, presumably, they are susceptible. They're not susceptible to GDPR in that case because you're on American soil, right? So that doesn't apply. So there's nothing really protecting you should a data breach occur. So
that's why I encrypt all my data leaving my home.
Yeah,
my ISP can't actually see what I'm doing.
I see. So and this is just your online practices to encrypt everything.
Yes, yes. But then I'm a cybersecurity person, so you would expect me to be safe and secure.
You would expect so. But your credit card was one of the ones that were compromised, and so it's not necessarily a direct cause and effect by you. It's not something that you did wrong. So we need to be educated as far as understanding how these things happen and be more careful with our data.
And we can't think when we hear about a data breach, don't take it for granted that it's not going to happen to you.
Right.
And that's my point. That's my point of sharing that personal story of it actually did happen. I was part of a data breach and did something happen? Yes. If cyber criminals will steal the data, what happens, that data then goes onto the dark web.
Yeah.
It goes for sale.
Sure.
Somebody else will buy it, somebody else will use it or exploit it in other ways, whether that's for phishing campaigns or some other ways, or they'll exploit the credit card details, the finance details, or even medical insurance details. Medical insurance theft. All these things are money-making machines for cyber criminals.
I mean, the dark web is in a very big way a business for a lot of individuals that are, you know, cyber criminals. So I think about how that data, if it's not presumably valuable, it may sit on the dark web without a buyer for some time. So then I can become complacent and think, oh yeah, my data was compromised in that particular breach, but nothing has happened, so I don't think anything's ever going to happen. But then suddenly, 5 years later, someone buys the data, and I had that same password that was compromised on my online banking or some other account.
Yeah, I mean, so you need to think about multiple levels of authentication, and also multiple. You know, I have multiple email addresses, mm-hmm. So I have what I define as my throwaway email address, the one that, you know, you use for those party invites or the regular stuff that comes, the things that are likely to spam me.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or where I don't think security is really conscious. I always use a different email address.
Mm.
Yeah. And then my, you know, my bank and my other staff have a different email address that I use for nothing else.
Okay.
So my phone, yeah, I separate these things. And then my bank, I use the SMS authentication. You know, I can also use fingerprint scanning if I choose on the app. Mm-hmm. Use that secondary authentication method as well. Is it painful? Yeah, slightly. You know, does it take me an extra 30 seconds to log on to things? Yeah. But, you know, hopefully I stay secure. But as we've already established, you know, I'm secure to a certain degree. Yeah, cyber criminals did get my credit card information from somebody, you know, from a site I use, a site that I trusted. You know, the other thing is, you know, credit cards or don't use debit cards, only use credit cards. When you use a credit card online, make sure it's a credit card that has a certain limit.
Mm.
You don't use your debit card because it has access to your bank account.
It's fantastic information, Tony, and I know that we're running short on time, so finally I'd like to ask you, could you provide for us three pillars of advice? So first, if you had the opportunity, Tony, to make a universal announcement to every individual consumer and non-IT person out there about cybersecurity, what would you say?
It really has to be the point of don't think it's not going to happen to you. Because it probably has happened to you. You've probably been part of a breach in some way. So engage in the subject and consciously consider who has your data and why you're providing the data. So, you know, next time you install an app on your phone, if it's a flashlight app and it's saying it needs access to your contacts, don't install it, yeah? Because it doesn't need access to your contacts. You know, when you go shopping online, you know, if you're not going to buy anything other than that one thing, don't create the account. Type your credit card details in. You know, consciously make a decision about who has your data, why they have your data, and start taking control of it and engage in the subject.
All right. Secondly, Tony, what would you say if you had the ear of every CEO or senior corporate decision maker?
So one of the biggest things, there's stacks of technology companies can use to protect themselves. You know, you could have an endless cybersecurity budget. Obviously, use good security technology and make sure it's updated and make sure you continually invest in it. But the biggest thing I would say to any CEO is educate your employees. If you look at the data breaches that have happened over the last 2 to 3 years, the vast majority of them come from spear phishing attacks. This is a human issue. Yeah. Where somebody clicks a link, they give up their credentials, they think that it's a legitimate email, and they open the doors to your network. So employee education has to be the biggest thing I would say to any CEO. You know, make sure there's an active program in place and make sure it's a frequent program. You know, make sure you continually run it and refresh it.
Finally, what would you say to every overworked IT professional, Tony?
This is such a great question. Stop complaining. Yeah. Yeah. It's what keeps us all in work, and it's what keeps our salaries in a really good
state. There you go.
But on a serious note, being a little bit more serious, you know, overworked IT professionals, yeah, I've been in the game now 25 years, and for all 25 years, I would consider that I've been overworked in that way. Prioritize. Look to see, you know, we're now in the age of automation and things can be automated. Prioritize the things that can be automated and the things you can pass off to technology. Allow them to go off and do it and only put yourself in the interesting things. So prioritize on the really core things you need to do.
Tony, that's a lot of sage and timely advice. It's good that there are experts like yourself who are willing to make it easier for us to understand and give the type of guidance that's so essential these days. This is an industry where no person or company can take too much time to make decisions. Knowledge and action need to be everyday events. Here at endpointsecurity.ca, we're obviously very concerned for the safety and security of our customers, their businesses, and their data. But as our chat here shows, the concern can't just end there. It's the data and activities of other people as well, those who somehow, some way, get connected to our customers through legitimate means, as well as through the breaches and hacks that continue to plague our connected world. We have a blog that follows up from this conversation, as I mentioned, and you can find it at blog.endpointsecurity.ca. And as always, our close relationship with the experts at ESET means that we have your back. So thank you, Tony, for joining me today.
Well, thank you very much, Robbie. It's been great to be here.
And thank you for tuning in. Stay safe out there, and be sure to join us again for the next chapter in our ongoing series on cybersecurity for Canadian business. I'm Robbie Ferguson. Stay safe.